You are listening to Punkish Podcast number 537. We've got a packed show tonight. We're going to be talking about Dave Grohl. We're going to be talking about Dave Grohl again. We're going to be talking about Large Ingrace. We're going to be talking about the Cro-Mags. We're going to be talking about Gender Chores. We're going to be talking about Spitter, Will Wheaton of Star Trek The Next Generation and of Tabletop. We're going to be talking about not Howie Mandel, something related, I can't even remember. Pete Davidson, similar to Howie Mandel. We're going to be talking about some reggae. We've got a jam-packed show tonight, and so let's get this party started. And we are back, and we've got a lot of news stories to cover tonight. We got a lot to talk about. But first of all, we are here with some great co-hosts. First of all, Hallie Bullitt, back in the saddle again after doing a public service last week and getting people shot up with drugs.
Oh my gosh, that was so crazy, you guys. When I won't take up time talking about it, but that volunteering, I volunteered at like a pop-up, like drive-through COVID vaccination site that a tiny, like small town pharmacy was trying to run, and it was total chaos. The cops almost shut it down, but I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I was there. The more people that were there, like it made it like slightly easier to wrangle the chaos. So I'm like really, really, really glad that I went and that I was there, but it was nuts.
Were shooties cool and respectful, or were they dicks about it?
Oh man, people were so cool. People were just so grateful. It was pretty beautiful to see. The cops, of course, were annoying. Cops are just right annoying at, in my experience, just annoying at best and just god awful at worst. But I don't know. Maybe other people have positive cop experiences. That's just my life. Like I just don't ever have positive experiences with cops. So I was just like rolling my eyes. I was like, what? Even this? Like even this? You're gonna make difficult for people. Like it was rough.
But I'm certainly not one of these guys with the blue American flags like driving around, you know what I mean? But I'm probably more pro police than the average punker, but maybe not. However, I've really never had a great interaction. I've talked about on the podcast, like the vast majority of my interactions with cops has been like terrible. Yeah. And they don't seem to be good at problem solving or de-escalation. To the opposite, they seem to take a problem, make it worse, or escalate a problem, you know?
They seem to like not, in my experience, it's like they always just seem to not like people. It's like, why did you, your whole fucking job is to protect people. Like, if you hate people, why are you doing this job? Yeah, this is a bummer.
Listen, we're not going to solve the issue of police tonight, but I mean, to speak on behalf of police, just, you know, like I said, most police I dealt with, I have not been a fan with at all. I mean, when I lived in California, I got pulled over 14 times, and every single time they're like, you were swerving. How much have you had to drink? And my answer every single time, zero. You know, so.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point being is, I'm sure it is a tough job. You do deal with a lot of wacky people, you know. So I don't know. I think I would guess. Most or at least a good number of cops go in into the with the right intentions, but maybe the training and the psychology of the thing as a whole is not great. I don't know.
I feel so bad. I got us so profoundly off topic and like veered us into like very like sort of like scary waters. Like we don't have to talk about cops. I'm sorry I brought it up at all.
And do you enjoy the show Cops C.O.P.S. Bad boys, what you gonna do when they come for you? No. Bonus question, and more. Who sang the song Bad Boys, and what is their significance?
Oh God, I know this. I know it, but I'm drawing a blank.
Inner Circle sang Bad Boys, okay. And it wasn't even really a police song to begin with. It was really more of an anti-Rude Boy anthem. And, of course, Inner Circle was the reggae group that included Jacob Miller, a very famous reggae singer who died in the late 70s, I believe. And more, what was the other gigantic hit that Inner Circle had?
I'm not sure.
Ooh, I'm gonna make you sweat. Till you can't sweat no more. Inner Circle, people. Great band, actually. Great band. Okay, so listen. While we're talking about reggae from the 70s and 80s, we actually have a show here about punk rock. You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. So let's hit some mail while I pull it on up. This is from Samantha H., who is not Samantha Barrett. John, thanks for the interview with Susie Moon. I've been a fan since the Civet days, and it was really cool to hear you ask different type questions. I noticed that you started to ask questions that were somewhat uncomfortable regarding Susie's parents, for example, but you backed off. I think you should press more on those types of questions. Most interviews are the same 5 or 10 questions, but we want to learn more about people. Please keep it up. Have Hallie and M do interviews too. And that's from Samantha H. And so what Samantha is referring to was Punk News Podcast 536.5. I think the plan is we're going to have more bonus episodes, maybe one every other week, not every week. And so myself and Hallie and M and Sammy B and whoever else wants to, we're either going to do some interviews and we're going to play. My next special might be like a DJ special where I play a bunch of songs. And we're probably going to have bands on the show as well. We were going to have Susie on the show, but the schedule really just was not working out. So I said, fine, I'll just make Susie the first bonus episode. So Hallie and Em, I don't know if you guys want to interview some people or just play some tracks for a bonus episode or whatever. You know, it's a wide open prairie these days.
I love that. I love interviewing people.
Well, there you go. Maybe more interviews coming along on the Punk News Podcast bonus episodes. This is from Abe. Please don't ever talk about NFTs again. This is the Punk News Podcast, not Edgelord Crypto Creep Hour. Please and thanks. And that's from Abe.
Can we release that as an NFT?
What's like that?
The clip where we talk, where you read the email. Yes. Can we release that as an NFT?
And more, you just made us $1 million. Yes. Yes, we can. I am going to sell that NFT. I want to know who's buying the Tim Armstrong NFT. That's my thing with the NFTs. Like, if like Grimes or whatever wants to sell an NFT for $1 million and some idiot buys it, then fine. You know what? Who cares? If you got $1 million to spend on a Grimes NFT, you deserve to lose that $1 million, frankly. But like Tim Armstrong, you know, I'm sure he's got some rich fans, but I like Tim Armstrong's fans. They'll buy anything he puts out because he's written some amazing music, you know. And so I'm very on the fence. Listen, I won't buy an NFT, but like Tim Armstrong's fan love Tim Armstrong. If he puts out like a painting or a print, his fans buy it immediately, right? And so I just hope there's not some fan that doesn't have like $5,000 or $10,000 to blow. It's like, I gotta buy Tim Armstrong an NFT, and they blow $10,000 and give it to Tim Armstrong, and it's worth like nothing like in 6 months. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I need to go back and listen to the episode because I don't know enough about NFTs to have like an opinion about any of those. So I'm sorry, I'm being like the most boring co-host right now.
NFTs, it's a new era. Anyway, this is from Hex. Once again, you failed to dig into Record Store Day's problems. Record Store Day backs up independent releases for months. It encourages record price inflation. Plus, it leaves record stores with massively overpriced dead stock and requires them to invest tens of thousands of dollars. No one needs a repress of the Beatles. Support independent labels, independent artists, and independent stores. Don't turn record stores into Walmart. And that's from Hex. Well, listen. We talk about record stores. I think it's cool, and I think it's cool when record stores don't take part in it. And I think it's really cool when record stores don't take part of Record Store Day, and instead they just like buy a bunch of like super rare or interesting used stuff and sell that instead. So, you know, I most record stores that I know that do Record Store Day are happy to do it and are excited to do it because they make a fair amount of bank. So, you know, I don't think anything's perfect, but as far as things that are generally good go, I think Record Store Day is fine. You know.
Yeah, it's like if the record stores like it, then, you know, yeah, if it's not for you, don't participate. But if the record stores generally like it, then I think it's like it's a good thing. Record stores, they don't have an easy time. If it's like if it's generating more business for them and they like it, then as far as I'm concerned, it's like awesome, you know.
Word on the street, interestingly, the age of COVID was an incredibly fruitful time for small record labels, and most record stores actually did pretty well during this time period as well.
This is what my uncle runs a small record store in Kansas, and I was like so shocked to hear. Oh, I know this. Oh no, now I'm where M was, where I'm like it's in the tip of my brain. Okay, I'm going to look it up. But my uncle runs a great little record store in Kansas, and I was like shocked to hear via my mother that he's done like totally fine during this time. I was like super relieved because I was just so sort of imagining that it had to have been just like a suck fest for him, but I guess it was like fine, you know. People were like home and buying a lot of stuff from him online, and I think he did okay.
Is it Sister of Sound Records?
No, it is not.
Vinyl Renaissance?
Vinyl Renaissance. That's my uncle. That's my uncle Dan.
Well, listen, people. If you are in Overland Park, Kansas, lot your uncle's record store has a lot of very high reviews. 207 reviews, 4.6. Listen, people, go check out Vinyl Renaissance. And if I'm ever in Kansas, which I don't know if I will be, I'll check it out. Go ahead. Was that Howie?
He's a cool dude. He's a cool, like, really eccentric guy. I think, like, probably I would imagine that part of the appeal of going is just that you get to talk to, like, my weird uncle.
Does he have a tasting room? It looks like he's got a tasting room there.
I think he's, like, really tried to, like, branch. Yeah, again, via my mother, I heard that he had added, like, he had paired with, like, a wine situation. Yeah, he's, like, just, like creative, like, funny, like, kooky guy. He's, like, exactly what you want a record store owner to be. He's just, like, kooky.
And
smart. And smart. Sorry. I'm like, my uncle's never going to hear this, but it's like now I'm suddenly like feeling like, is my uncle going to hear this and think that I just think he's eccentric and kooky? He's like smart and cool. Go ahead. Sorry. Talk to M.
Listeners, you heard it. Hallie hates her uncle and she's always had a deep seated anger towards him. M. Moore, record store owner, what's the best template? Angry curmudgeon that hates everybody, person that doesn't really know anything, youthful person with youthful exuberance. Or wise and seasoned record store guy or gal that's cool, that knows about whatever release you're buying, be it Flock of Seagulls, be it Bow Wow Wow, be it Backstreet Boys, or be it some obscure Lou Reed or prog rock release.
Extremely knowledgeable with youthful exuberance and a touch of curmudgeonness.
How about you? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Em.
Oh, then you get the full picture.
How about you, Hallie? What's your preferred record shop clerk?
I don't know, but I just loved M's description because it actually sounded like she was describing a wine. She was like, I wanted this, but with like undertones of this and this sort of flavor and a little bit of a fruity. Like, I thought I loved that description. I think most of the record stores I go to have like young, exuberant owners, but like I love old people. I think old people are like so hilarious and they know a lot. So yeah, I don't have a preference.
Well, there you have it. Let's play a song. Who's going to play a song? Hallie, Emma, myself. Who's going to kick it off?
You are, John.
All right. Do you guys want to hear a straight up punk song? Do you want to hear your punk meets new wave, or do you want to hear something that's got nothing to do with anything?
What's the something that doesn't have to do with anything?
Well, you have to pick. Is that what you want?
Okay.
All right.
Sure.
You didn't get to know what's behind curtain number three before you pick curtain number three, Em.
So later on in this episode, we're going to talk about, if we get to it, we're going to be talking about Police and Helicopter. Police and Helicopter is a very famous song by a reggae artist named John Holt. You say, John, who's John Holt? John Holt is a famous reggae singer, but he's also in the Paragons. And more, what's the connection between the Paragons and punk rock?
The Paragons and punk rock.
Exactly, correct. There's a connection there. The answer is that the Blondie did The Tide Is High. That's the Paragons, and that song is written by John Holt. John Holt's got a very famous album called Police and Helicopter, produced by June Joe, which is a famous producer, and it's a great album. There's one song in there that always stuck out to me, and it's called Fat She Fat, and it's a song about how he gets a girl pregnant, but he's not going to pay any child support or anything because he's a Rasta, and Rastas don't pay tax. And there's a lot of Rasta songs about that, and honestly, like, it always seemed like really messed up to me. Like there's some reggae songs where they're like, you know, she says I got her. Like, Yellow Man's got like three songs or more where she's like he Yellow Man loves the joke. It's like a girl said I got her pregnant, but the baby's not yellow, so it can't be mine. And like that's the joke, you know, which is kind of funny, I guess. You know, I like Yellow Man, but there's at least 10, probably more reggae songs where the singer says I got a woman pregnant, but I'm not gonna pay any child support or raise the kid because I'm Rasta, and if you're Rasta, you're supposed to get many women pregnant, but you don't raise them, and you sure don't pay child support because that's a government system thing. And it always seemed like really messed up to me, honestly. And so what's interestingly, there's a singer called Linville Thompson. Linville Thompson, same era as John Holt, and he was also produced by Junjo. He's got a song called Baby Father, and in the song Baby Father, and this is the only reggae song I've heard that does this, he says, you know you got her pregnant. You should raise that kid because that's the right thing to do. And even in Linville's a Rasta, and not that all Rastas believe the same thing, because all Rastas certainly don't believe the same thing. But I love that Linville Thompson is saying, no, you should raise a kid if you get a woman pregnant. And so we're gonna just play both songs. We're gonna and I don't want to make the thing about John Holt that he's got this whacked out song, because John Holt is an amazing singer, but he does have this one song that's whacked out, and that doesn't define him, but it's just a weird song. So we're gonna play John Holt's "Fat She Fat," which is about him getting a woman pregnant and then not paying child support, and then we're gonna listen to the reply song by Linville Thompson, "Baby Father," and we'll be back.
You send me lucky. Because you're fat, you're fat, you're fat. You won't come tax me. Not because you're fat, you're fat, you're fat. You won't come tax me. But I'm a dreadlocks and I don't buy fat. Yes, I'm a dreadlocks and I don't buy fat. Not because you're fat, you're fat, you're fat.
You shouldn't tell her how much you love her. pregnancy. Now she crying out for young baby. You want to run, now you want to act. You want to see it's not you. Baby father, don't run, don't ride. Whoa, whoa, oh yeah. Stand up and face the facts of life. Yes, you know it's must you. You are the only one. Kiss her and give her nice loving. Kiss her and give her sweet loving. Now she crying out for pregnancy. Now she crying out for young baby. Now you want to run away. Now you want to say it's not you. Baby father, don't run, don't ride. Whoa, want to be a baby father, you shouldn't kiss the young girl. You shouldn't tell her how much you love her. Now she crying out for pregnancy. Now she crying out for young baby. You want to run, now you want to act. You want to see it's not you. You want to see it's not me. Stand up and face the truth. You were the only one. Kiss her and give her nice loving. Kiss her and give her sweet loving. Now she crying up for pregnancy. Now she crying up for young baby. Now you want to run away. No. Queen, maybe a movie star. So stand up and face the truth. Don't you run away. No. Baby father, don't run.
I feel like I'm talking too much about reggae on the podcast. I mean, I've been doing a lot of reggae chat on the podcast, but I've been in a reggae mood lately, you know?
Yeah.
go ahead.
It's a good music to listen to now. I don't know a lot about reggae, so this is like really interesting, you know?
Well, the cool thing about reggae is Jamaica's a tiny island, but the musical depth is insane. Let's not talk about reggae. Let's talk about punk rock. Dave Grohl, the most famous punk rocker there is. He is making a new documentary. His new documentary is called What Drives Us. And it looks like it's basically him just interviewing various musicians about touring around in a van. Musicians appearing in the documentary include Ian MacKaye, D.H. Peligro of Dead Kennedys, Mike Watt, Kira Rosler, Ringo Starr, Radke, Brian Johnson, Jennifer Finch of L7, Fleetwood Hot Chili Peppers, Dave Lombardo of Slayer. And actually, let me pull up the thing. St. Vincent's in it. Steven Tyler of Aerosmith in it, The Edge of U2, Ben Harper, Pete Style of Scream, Starcrawler, surprisingly, Lars of Metallica, and he really comes off like a total D-bag, Tony Kanal, and like honestly, a lot of famous people. And some people are like, yeah, that sounds cool, man, interviewing bands that have toured in vans about being in vans. And some people are like, Dave Grohl, you have to stick your nose into everything. And other people are like, Dave, you're only interviewing people that made it. You're not looking at the side of people that didn't make it. I don't know. Hallie and Em, are you guys Dave Grohl out? Do you think this is cool? What's your stance?
I think this is so cool. I'm like, so I think this is a great idea. I can't believe no one did it before. I mean, is this exactly like the swath of people that I would like to see interviewed on this subject? Like, no, but like, I still think it's gonna be great. What I'm hoping is that this is gonna end up being like a mini get in the van for like all of these artists, you know? And I don't know. I think it's going to be cool. I'm actually like really looking forward to it. I mean, the only thing, I got a little bit of a thing from the trailer where I was like, oh, is this just going to be a bunch of rock stars like trying to prove that they have like street cred and that they like paid their dues? But like, I'm really hoping it's not going to be that, because, you know, touring in a van, it really is like, it is such a uniquely bananas experience. It is like so like you, I've never like experienced such a completely crazy, like it's like this joy and like freedom. It's like, I've never felt more free in my whole life than I did just like touring in a van. There's this, it's just like a total freedom. And like, there's such joy in that. And it's just also complete stress. It's like such a, if you're touring on that level, shows are getting canceled, you're staying in like the shittiest, most like disgusting punk houses, like do you have like crazy stressful stories? But like, I think like if you get all these rock stars talking about these experiences, there's just something so, I think for any musician, there's something so like, there's such a heartfelt connection to that experience that I think we're going to get something really genuine and really like fun from a lot of these artists. And so, I don't know, I think it's going to be rad. I mean, I got people's skepticism. Em, are you excited about this or like skeptical? Like a lot of people are.
I'm kind of like on the fence about this, cause I watched the trailer and the trailer looks really good. And like, there's a lot of people who I want to see, like, their interviews, like Ian MacKaye and Jennifer Finch and, like, Kira Rossler and all that. Like, I think that's going to be really interesting. I hate Metallica. And Lars's whole, well, I've never toured in a band thing really pissed me off.
He's so pleased with himself. You know, he's so pleased with himself.
Yeah. So it kind of seems like, oh, no, are they going to try to take over? Because it kind of seems like anything that any of them are in, they take over. You know what I mean? Hopefully that's not the case with this. But it looks really interesting. And I'm looking forward to it. It kind of makes me wonder, too, because the Foo Fighters, they were going to do a van tour. They had it scheduled for 2020. And they had to cancel it because of COVID. So it kind of makes me wonder if the documentary was a tie-in to the tour somehow, or if they're connected at all, or if that's just kind of a reach. But, I think it's funny, too, what people are like, oh, Dave Grohl's everywhere. So that ran, like, one day, and then the next day, there's another Dave Grohl story. I just thought it was really funny. The timing of everything, it's like, like you don't hear from them for a bit and then it's all Dave Grohl.
So Foo Fighters were going to tour in a van instead of a tour bus like they usually do or something?
Yeah, they had the van tour, which like it just seemed like they were going to go to all these different places in their van.
I don't know, what does that prove? Like they you know, it's like
we know how to drive.
Yeah, I'm honestly, like as Hallie so eloquently stated, part of what makes going around in a van so bonding is that you know there's freedom, but the people are acting wacky. If the van breaks down, you're screwed or whatever. You know, shows get canceled. Foo Fighters have none of these problems at all. So like, that almost seems like I'm slumming it with the common people. I don't know. Honestly, like. Maybe I'm jaded. Like, Dave Grohl annoys me, but maybe I'm wrong. And almost everybody that knows him says he's a good guy. I know of one band that knows him that thinks he's a dick. And honestly, I kind of tend to believe that band, or that he's kind of a phony baloney kind of guy. Maybe I'm wrong, but, like, he's always smiling. He's always having a good time. He's like, rock and roll, I'm Dave Grohl. It's like, oh, shut up. You know, I don't know. And it was like he's in every documentary. And you could say, man, why is Dave Grohl always sticking his nose in everything? But on the other hand, it's like, is everyone's always asking him? Then he's a dick if he says, no, I'm not going to be in your documentary. You know, so it's kind of a no-win situation. And the answer is, I don't know what's in the onion that is Dave Grohl. Deep down, is he the punk rocker that made it and he's trying to pay it back by, you know, having Pat Smear in his band, by, you know, interviewing Mike Watt along with Ringo in his documentary? Or is he the rock star that always wanted to be a rock star, but he's trying to maintain a faux credibility because he knows that's the thread that keeps him famous? Dave?
The onion. I just like the, I like the phrase the onion that is Dave Grohl.
Lars, like, I've never toured in the band. You just want to punch him in the face. It's like Lars, like, he probably is the most obnoxious guy in metal. I mean, Lars, like, I'm not even a Metallica fan really at all, but oh my god, Lars is the worst. Like, he's always laughing. You know what he is? He's like Rick. Who's the guy from Pawn Shop? Is that Rick? I think it's Rick, the bald guy. I hate that guy. I don't hate him, but I don't like him. He's always laughing at his own jokes. I hate people that laugh at their own jokes and, you know, or laugh at their own jokes, and that the point of that joke is to put someone else down. I hate that. I hate that, Lars. Anyways, not that Lars cares what I think, but maybe he does. Maybe the reason Lars is such a dick is he knows that he's kind of a dick, but he can't stop himself and he feels bad about it. So he keeps being a dick when he doesn't have to be.
See, now I thought he was I must not know like what the degree to which he's a dick, like, because I assumed he was joking, because like, how, maybe I just have a misconception. How does a band skip over the touring in a van part? Like, I didn't, like, is that true? They never toured in a van? They just went straight to touring in like buses? Is that really true?
Well, the answer is I don't know this for a fact, but I would guess yes, for two reasons. A, Metallica is a metal band, and they became a metal band right when metal exploded. Yeah. The metal bands have and honestly, punk bands really could take a lesson from metal bands. Metal bands have always insisted that what they do is worth money. Their records are always kind of expensive, and their tickets are always kind of expensive. You know, metal band tickets start at 20 or 25. Punk band tickets start at $5. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so, but also Metallica was on the second Medical Massacre record, which was a massive record, and they became ultra famous as soon as that record came out, which was before their first album. So I think that Metallica was raking in the money from day one, essentially, or not day one, like day three, you know. Mm. So anyways, let's keep talking about Dave Grohl, because I like him so much. Dave Grohl, Mick Jagger released a song with Dave Grohl. The song is called Easy Sleazy, and it's Mick and Dave, and basically Mick sings about the pandemic, and he says, we're going to get through it all, essentially. I've got a lot of thoughts on this, so I don't know if you guys want me to kick it off or someone else wants to kick it off.
Kick it off. I love when you talk about the Stones and Mick Jagger. I live for that.
Mick is the man. First of all, Mick's like 77 here or something. So for 77 or 76 or 78, Mick is tearing it up. This song, I didn't love it, but I loved parts of it. I really loved it. Like, I was so thrilled when he starts singing, because he's singing in his Some Girl era's punk accent, which he used in like 78 on the record Some Girls, arguably the greatest album ever. And I'm like, oh my god, Mick's doing the Some Girls vocal, which he hasn't done since then, like kind of like the faux Johnny Rotten, faux, like his vocal is, he's playing a lower class English guy mocking an upper class accent, which I love. And he's got kind of like a tough snarl. And honestly, even here, he's actually a little bit influenced by David Johansen, when ironically David Johansen was influenced by Mick Jagger. And I thought that part was really cool. I thought like the part where they kind of get more melodic was not needed. I'm like, just keep rocking out like you did on Some Girls. I thought Dave Grohl's drumming was fine, actually. Although I will say, like, people say Dave Grohl's an amazing drummer. I think he's an adequate drummer, but he's got one speed and one style. Boom, bap, boom, bap, boom, bap, which is cool and good for this song. But if you compare his drumming to Ringo or Charlie Watts, you'll notice that they drum to support the band, while Dave Grohl just drums to drum, and there is a difference. Dave Grohl is more like a John Bonham-style drummer, but I wouldn't put those in the same sphere at all. I was thrilled to hear Mick kind of being jacked up, tearing forward, doing the Some Girls style vocals. I like the idea of the song. It's like, here's all the crazy things I did or tried to do in quarantine. That being said, sometimes Mick's a great lyricist, but sometimes he's really lazy. Like, there's that song Let's Work, and the lyrics are, everyone get up off your butt, let's work. It's like, it's so hard to use the word butt in a song, like, unless you're Gwar or something. And it just sinks like a lead balloon. Here, not as bad. I did think some of these lyrics were kind of blocky. And some of the lyrics sound like Mick caught up like his great-grandkid, who's probably like 30. And he's like, yo, what are the kids into these days? And he's like, I don't know, great-grandpa, Zoom and Pilates? And Mick's like, oh, that's good, that's good. And they just took those words and kind of like meshed them together. But, you know, and also another thing is, for giant rock stars, it's very hard to write a song. We can get through this all together. And Mick was on in an interview with Rolling Stone. Mick was honest. He's like, I haven't really suffered during COVID, but I know people have, you know. And Alice Cooper kind of did the same thing. He had a COVID anthem. And it's like, I don't really think this song is going to inspire people to get through COVID, Mick. I'm sorry. I think you'd be better off just doing a kick-ass song with Dave Grohl in your 70s Some Girl style lyrics. But that being said, you know, people seem to be of two camps. A, they were surprised at how much it kind of rocks, or people thought it was an old man trying to be youthful. I'm more in the first camp. I thought it rocked. I thought it was cool. I don't think it's any great momentous song, but I was very, very pleased to see that amazing spark that the Rolling Stones have always had is still there. And if someone could come along and kind of work with them and say, let's do at least one last great album in the Some Girl style or sort of like that, we can do it. This proves they can do it, and I hope they do it. Hallie.
I hope so, too, just because I would want to hear you talk about it. I have very similar take on this to you. I, like, loved hearing Mick do, like, a punkier vocal style. I got, like, a real kick out of that. But it's like, I kind of like listened to it twice and then like, I didn't really need to hear it again, you know? That being said, after I'd listened to it, I found that the chorus was still kind of stuck in my head. So it's like definitely, it's definitely catchy. I like that you spent enough time to like figure out exactly what it was about. Like little lyrics kept catching my ear and I was like, I could tell it was kind of about COVID, about conspiracy theories. But again, it was like, I just didn't care quite enough to like do the deep dive and like look up the lyrics and like try to figure it out. It just didn't like inspire me to like get that invested in it. But I thought it was like fun. I feel like there's a lot of projects and collaborations happening right now where I'm just like, that's fun. Like I'm glad, you know, like do I want to listen to it 100 times? No, but like am I glad that people just like got to like did some collaboration and did something that we probably wouldn't have heard otherwise, if everyone was busy touring and like living their, you know, musicians were like living their normal lives, like they wouldn't probably have time for like maybe little like crazy like projects like this. So I don't know. It's like I get a kick out of it and then I just kind of move on. That to me is like the purpose that these sort of like COVID projects have been like serving for me. I don't know, like, M, was this, like, did this song, like, did it hit you? It just didn't hit me, but I liked it. I thought it was fine and fun.
Yeah, I kind of have the same thing. Like, it was better than I thought it was going to be. I didn't think it was going to be, like, awful, but I wasn't really sure. But, yeah, I thought it was good. Same thing, like, haven't really listened to it too many times. But I like the whole aesthetic of the video too. It's kind of neat. And like the song's okay. And it's good to see people like working together, but with stuff like this, it's like, how did they like, get in contact with each other? What was it like working together? And, you know, like, do they get along? You know, like I have a lot of questions that way. You know, are they going to release more stuff together and all that? So it'd be interesting to have kind of an update, like if, because everything I read has just been like, oh yeah, it was just like a one-off thing. But it'd be interesting to kind of have a behind the scenes with this and kind of get the truth behind, you know, Dave Grohl and stuff.
The behind the scenes would kind of almost feel like way better than the song itself, right? Like just to know what's a conversation like between Mick Jagger and Dave Grohl. Like I want to hear that conversation. Yeah. That'd be so weird.
I think Mick Jagger is actually probably a lot odder than people think. I mean, have we talked about this before?
This particular subject I have not talked about with you.
Well let's talk about it briefly. And then I actually talked about this in my bonus episode with Susie Moon. Mick is the man. But I think he's really weird because he had a kid like 18 years ago with this Brazilian model, and then we're like, oh my God, Mick's 63 or something, and he's having kids, you know, with like a 20-year-old Brazilian model, and I was like, oh man, I can't believe Mick had like his 10th kid or something, and I thought that was the last one, and he recently like got another woman pregnant, and he's had like 4 kids since then, right? And so this dude like keeps having kids, and like you think like Mick like. Every time you have a kid, A, A, it costs you millions and millions and millions of dollars, and B, you probably have some responsibility to raise this kid. And if you're 78, like, there's no way you can raise this kid through – well, I shouldn't say that. It's difficult to raise that kid through to adulthood, which is kind of your responsibility if you're a parent, I'd argue. And it's like, Mick, there are so many ways to not have kids. Why do you keep having kids? And I think he's got kind of an old blues man thing or whatever, where he's like, he thinks if he somehow takes protection against that, then he's like going to cost himself his own mojo, and he needs to preserve his mojo because he's Mick Jagger. That's what I think. I mean, I have no evidence to back this up at all, but Hallie, don't you think that's weird that a kid, I mean, he knows he's got like literally 15 kids. He knows the result of having a kid. What's that going to bear upon his life? And he keeps doing it. Do you think it's because he's got so much money that it never really affects him, so he doesn't care? Or what do you think?
I can't even pretend to understand that mentality. It's like, I don't know whether it's like, I don't even know. Is it irresponsible? I mean, these women are obviously choosing to like, you know, they're making some choices here too. Obviously, you know, hopefully you hope both parties are like cool with the choices, but I can't even pretend to be able to get inside that mindset.
Well, I'm not really so concerned with the women, because I think that, I mean, listen, it's Mick Jagger. He's asking you out on a date or whatever. You know what you're getting involved in, right? And you've never heard a woman say anything bad about him. So it's not like he's it's not like he's a predator or anything. You know, he's just, you know, he's Mick Jagger. But the kid, like he's got some responsibility towards the kid, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, man. Yeah. So I think Mick Jagger is profoundly weirder than people think he is. You know, I don't know, man. There are two interviews that I would love to do. I'll probably never get to do Mick Jagger and Danzig. Those are the only two left on my list that I want to do. And it's probably not going to happen, but oh well. You know, so. All right, listen. Oh, Large Anne Grace. Large Anne Grace released a new video. It's called Supernatural Possession. It's off her new album called Stay Alive. I guess it's her second solo album, or maybe it's a third solo album, and it's a 2-minute banger, and it's essentially a riff with Laura Jane singing over top of it. And more, what's your take on the video and song for Supernatural Possession?
The video is really cool. There's lots going on, really colorful, and everything. The only thing I don't like about the video is just like all the flashing, you know, it's just it's everywhere. I don't really like that. But other than that, no, like, the video is cool. I really like the song. I really liked Stay Alive. Like, I put it on my list for last year and all that kind of stuff. But I haven't been listening to it as much, or, well, really at all, like, the past month or two. And I don't really know why. And then this was like, oh, yeah, you know, there's lots of, like, really interesting, really cool songs. And this is one of them. And I should start listening to it again. But I kind of think that just a lot of stuff that has been released during this time is going to get kind of forgotten about. You know, that's the one thing I don't really want to have happen, but I think is going to happen. Just like everything that came out in the first like few months of 2020 just kind of got completely more or less forgotten about. So, but it's cool. It's an interesting video. What are your takes on it?
I like this direction. Like I really did think like the sound of this was like quite exciting, and I liked the video. I thought it was like, yeah, colorful and just like very, very cool. I just like you know, the song is 2 minutes long. It's a quick song, but like, it's just like a couple of verses and a chorus, and like the verses are quite short. So it's basically just like, and the chorus is just her singing Supernatural Possession, like the same line kind of like over and over and over and over again. So it was like, by the time it's like a minute and a half, it's like really like a minute and a half of just listening to her sing Supernatural Possession. By the end, it was like, you know, and when you were describing your reaction to the flashing in the video, you were just kind of like, by the end, I really liked it, and I was kind of excited about the song. And then by the end, I was a little bit like, because I was like, it felt very punishing to just have to sort of listen. I'm realizing, John Gentile, right, that I am the kind of person that you described, a person that laughs at their own. Well, I'm not making jokes, but I do laugh at myself a lot, or I laugh about situations a lot. I spend most of the time that I'm talking laughing. So now I'm wondering if I fall into the category of person that you hate.
No, you don't. And here's why. Your laughter is a spontaneous reaction to the conversation itself, and it has no purpose. Whereas Rick from Pawn Shop and Lars laugh to say, aren't I smart? Aren't I clever? You know, he's punctuating. He's essentially saying, let's pause and think about what I just said and how clever it is. There's a difference there, Hallie.
Oh, good. Thank you. Thanks for letting me off the hook. Go ahead.
Plus, like when someone comes in, you're not like, the best I can do is $50. The best I, it's like, oh my God, I hate you, Rick. Go ahead.
So yeah, I really like, I'd love to hear some more of this kind of stuff from Laura Jane Grace, but like this song, like I said, it just kind of, it needed like a bridge. It needed another section, or it just needed to be like a minute long song. Like if you're really going to just do like a quick banger with that, like you just have these two basic song ideas and you want to just put them side by side, just make it, I don't know, make it like a really short, I don't know. I'll stop complaining. But I liked a lot of things about this.
Here's the question. The question is the Against Me / Laura Jane Grace era over? And there's no shame in that. Against Me, Laura Jane Grace had a very somewhat extended level of being on the cutting edge of punk and even music fame, and really lasted longer on the top of people's minds than most punk bands, especially most punk bands. The solo album, Shapeshift With Me, came out. People talked about it, kind of faded away. The solo album came out, and people talked about it for like a day or two, and it kind of faded away. Is the Against Me / Laura Jane Grace party over in that their most exciting work, or their work that moves the ground the most, is behind them? Or are we just in a temporary period, and Laura Jane Grace is going to come back with a Some Girls or a Tattoo You that is a slammer after some records that didn't light the world on fire?
What do you think, John?
I think the party might be over, honestly. I mean, lots of my favorite bands quote the party's over, and honestly, a lot of my favorite bands quote the party's over, but they're still making some of the best music ever, you know. But that being said, I do feel as though Against Me was very much the product of its time when they began. They evolved into something else, and they evolved into something else, and each evolution was kind of tied to an era in punk, and they were on the cutting edge. And I feel as though it's going to be very difficult for Against Me to evolve into something else from where they were, just because, you know, each of their past few records have been so meaningful. It's tough to have another record that really has that resonance. And plus, the audience is growing older. To Billy Joe Armstrong's credit, is he's been able to maintain a young audience even though he's getting older. And not that, you know, you should always try to have a young audience, because that's not really the point of music. But if you want to be what is considered by press and I guess the public as a whole as on the edge and exciting and cutting, you kind of do have to have somewhat of a younger audience, unless you're Bob Dylan, you know. And so I think Against Me's fan base is now 35, 40, maybe 30. And I think maybe the party's over, and maybe what might happen is maybe there won't be another Against Me album. Maybe there'll be another band or something. And then maybe 5 years from now, 10 years from now, there's going to be the huge Against Me reunion. But if I had to guess, I would say I would not expect another groundbreaking Against Me record if you're a big Against Me fan. Not to be Mr. Negative and not to say they're out of juice, but I'm just saying as the trend of these things go, I think the party might be over in that respect.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe there are people that would be super upset about that, but I feel like there's such a huge catalog of material of Laura Jane Grace as a songwriter and singing in that kind of voice and with that band. And to be honest, like, even though I had like some problems with just some of the dumb logistics of the songwriting with the song, I actually was more excited to hear this kind of like expression. I would prefer to hear this than to hear like more stuff that just sounds like the old Against Me. Does that make sense?
Oh, I agree. I'm just not sure that this sound will be, you know, at the front of people's year ends list, you know.
Hmm. But don't you think it would appeal to younger people though? I mean, I guess we'll have to see. Like, are younger people just open to this artist, you know? But I could see this material having like an appeal for younger people, maybe.
I would argue that at this point, Lars Jane Grace is to the Led Zeppelin to what people when I was in high school was. Like, you know, when I was in high school, yeah. Like Led Zeppelin, like this legendary band that was in the past that no one knows about, but oh my God, that everyone knows about, that like, oh, like this music is so ground. Like at that time, Robert Plant was only like 40 when I was in high school, you know, and he was putting out records, but no one cared. You know, it was like, oh, so I think Against Me, I mean, Against Me's been around since, 2005, 2003? It's almost 20 years, you know? So, and there's no shame in that, you know, but I would not expect Against Me to be able to achieve the extremely rarefied air that David Bowie was able to do, or even that Gwen was able to do for a while, and I think that juice might be up, you know, and that like remain at the cutting edge and be considered hip and driving music in year 20, in year 30, in year 40, you know. But we'll see. Okay. We'll see. Yeah. Here's the band that released a record 40 years ago and everyone's still fighting about it. Age of Quarrel, the famous debut album by the Cro-Mags. And as we discussed on the last episode of the podcast, it's being released by on Record Store Day. However, as we discussed on the podcast last week, I said, you know, I want to know who's putting this out, because that album is famously at the corner or at the intersection of a lot of conflicting parties. John Joseph was claiming that he had it for a while. Harley was claiming it. Rock Hotel were claiming that they had it. It was very unclear as to who actually – ever since that album's been released, it's been extremely unclear who owns it. And it was weird to see it coming out on Record Store Day, because it is at the center of so much conflict. And so we said, we're very surprised about this. Well, the surprise is pulled back. Harley Flanagan has said this is not authorized by anyone in the band, and it's unclear as to who's actually putting it out. Rock Hotel put out it originally, and Rock Hotel was a segment of Arista, and Arista was purchased by Sony, so possibly Sony owns the record, or the rights may have been transferred to another party, or it might be a straight-up bootleg. I don't even know. But anyways, Harley Flanagan is saying he's going to try to stop this release, and that he is working on releasing a, quote, official version with the consent of the five, not original Cro-Mags, but I guess classic Cro-Mags. I will say this article blew up all over the internet, and maybe it's because one website picked up on it, but no one wanted to give us credit. But, you know, that's fine. How is this battle going to resolve? Hallie Bullitt, how's the battle going to be resolved?
I have no idea how it's going to be resolved, but it just this kind of stuff bums me out like hugely, you know. It's just the idea, I don't know, our artists just having to like fight to, I don't know, be to make some money off of the stuff that they made, you know, it really does bum me out. And it also, while I don't really know what an NFT is exactly, what I do understand about it is like, isn't there an artist recently that made one where he like embedded in it that he gets paid anytime it gets sold? Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
I don't, but that sounds very interesting.
Yeah. So he digitally embedded in it that if whoever, you know, buys it, if they then, you know, sell it at a much, much higher price to someone else, he gets some percentage of that, which I think is just so totally fair. Because like you look at like a painting, someone will buy a painting from an artist for a certain amount of money. And then if like, you know, 30 years later, it's worth like 12 times that, the collector can sell it and make all this money. And then meanwhile, the artist whose art it is, they get zilch, which is just like, there's something so profoundly wrong about that to me. So I don't know, just I feel like all of this stuff, these conversations are like in the air. And so then when I hear about a band like the Cro-Mags like struggling in this way, it just like, yeah, it just bums me out. It makes me mad. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't even think about you. You are right that it is crazy how like people are getting like millions off stupid things. Cro-Mags, who record one of the most legendary punk albums of all time, haven't ever gotten a dime from what is legitimately amazing, awesome art. I mean, like, you can say all art is objective, but Age of Quarrel is, I'm just going to say, is an objectively more important, better, and more interesting thing than like an NFT, like than Tim Armstrong's skeletons winking at you. You know what I mean? Emma, what do you think?
Well, I agree on that point 100%. And like the whole thing's just kind of confusing. Like how did the whole thing work? Like, in the statement there, it says that they weren't given a copy of the contract and they weren't represented, when they signed. Like, does that affect the contract at all? Or is that just like a really predatory business practice?
I'm sorry, can you say that again? I was reading about this NFT how I was mentioning about. Oh. What was your question?
So in the statement, like, it says that, they were never given a copy of the contract. They weren't represented by counsel when they signed. Does that affect, like, the ownership, or does that affect anything, or is that just a very predatory business practice?
Well, I mean, you can always raise some arguments as to the contract was signed under duress, or the contract was invalid for this reason or that reason. But those kinds of arguments is oh, well, we didn't talk to an attorney. Well, you don't have to talk to an attorney to make a contract valid. You know, if they weren't given a copy of it, I mean, that's weird. But, like, that doesn't in itself make a contract invalid. I mean, you could say maybe they just never say give me a copy, you know. I mean, I hope the Cro-Mags win. But that being said, is there, particularly with medium-sized labels – contracts are extremely predatory, and in my practice this year, actually, I've been working with a bunch of artists getting the records back, and we've been targeting those kinds of things to increase our bargaining. I mean, I've never had a record label, actually a couple times, but for the vast majority, these record labels are not gonna be like, here, have it back, because they know they're kind of dirty. So you kind of have to say, well, we've got this bullet, that bullet, and this bullet, so you better give it back to us. And then they're like, well, we'll sell it back to you. You say, well, no, because we've got this bullet and that bullet, so the price goes down. So the way these things tend to work is you point out all the weaknesses they have and make a credible threat that if we have to fight, then we'll fight. And then you get the bargaining position down to a level the artist can live with and the label is acceptable with. So.
And what are the, like, so-called bullets? Like, what are the arguments that a band can legally make?
Okay, one big bullet is that the contract specifically details compensation, but it doesn't detail digital compensation because that didn't exist at the time. So you've been paying the band digitally at the vinyl rate, but the vinyl rate factors in your costs, where digital has almost no costs. So therefore, you're ripping them off. Or maybe you didn't even have the rights to the digital, although that tended to be a weaker argument, because usually these contracts say, you assign us all rights in perpetuity. Okay, that's fine, but it doesn't mention the compensation aspect. So you can say you haven't been paying them a fair rate because we didn't mention it, you know. Let's see, another bullet would be, there's what's called copyright termination, which means after 30, roughly speaking, after 35 years, any band can get the record back. So if you're year 25, you can say, well, I'm going to terminate in 10 years, so you give it back to me now, you know, or I'll buy it back, but I don't need to buy back the next 10 years, not the next forever, you know. Other bullets would be accounting. Record labels famously will underrepresent accounting figures, right? And so what you can do, and what I've done multiple times, is you say, all right, so they're not making that much money, so let's use the contract and bend back the royalties to see how much you're pulling in. And so you say, all right, we want to buy this record for 20 grand. And they're like, well, that's a 100 grand record. And you say, well, how is it a 100 grand record? Your own accounting only shows that it's pulling in 3 grand a year. So if you're only pulling in 3 grand a year and you want 100 grand, either you've been underpaying us or you're asking for way too much. So maybe I'll ask for an accounting and I'll go through your books, which I'm entitled to, and we'll see what the deal is. And of course, record labels never want you going through their books. And sometimes they'll give you phony numbers, or sometimes they'll give you confusing, you know. So those are all crowbars or bullets that you can use to lower the amount to buy back the record.
Oh my God, I love when you do legal speak. And it's also just so handy to have somebody that knows about law on the podcast. Sometimes it just comes in so terribly handy. So thank you for that. That's awesome.
Listen, people, Joseph at josephgentililaw.com. If you've got a record and you want to get it back, contact me. Let's play a song. Who's going to play a song? Em, kick it.
Yes. Okay. So, I found this band a while ago, and they don't have very many songs out right now, but they're working on something. So hopefully more will come out. And I love them. They are a doom punk band. They are out of Manchester, UK. They have darker tones, and this is in their music, and this is The Hollow by Witch Fever.
Doing The Hollow, doom punk. I'm always a fan of doom punk. That was cool. Let's talk about an more article here. Gender Chores, another English band. And more Hallie Bullet, famously a big fan of the English bands. Belfast is not English. Wait, there's Belfast, yeah. Ireland. Belfast is Ireland. All right. Anyway, she's a fan of UK bands. Although I don't know, is Belfast in Northern Ireland or Ireland proper?
It's Northern Ireland.
All right, so I was right. UK band. Yeah. Okay, all right. Back on track. I should stop talking. Ginger Shorts have released a new music video for Night in the Woods, also playing off the last track that Emore mentioned. Em, tell us all about Ginger Shorts at Night in the Woods.
Okay, so Ginger Shorts, they are a punk, more punk-leaning band, and they talk about, like, social issues and sexism and all this kind of stuff, and they're really, really good. So what happened was a few weeks ago on the podcast, I played a song by Problem Patterns, who are also out of Northern Ireland, and because of them, I found Ginger Shorts, and they have one EP out right now, one EP and two songs, and the EP is called Woman's Splain, and it was released in 2019, and it is really interesting. So Night in the Woods is all about like shitty landlords, basically, and like shitty renting conditions and everything, and the song is really interesting and really good, and the video is also really, really cool. And the video, one of the members of the band drew all this stuff and like put it together and everything. The one thing with the video, it has extreme flashing lights, so just watch out for that if you're gonna watch it. That's the warning. But it's really interesting, and again, I'm looking forward to hearing more from them, 'cause they have a lot of energy, especially if you find live videos of them. They look like they'd be really interesting live. Did you guys have thoughts on the Ginger Shorts?
I was with you, Em, in that I just, like, I got very excited about, like, I want to see what this band is going to do. Like, I feel that there's, like really, like, tremendous like potential here. I liked a lot of the lyrics. I thought the singer's voice was great. Like musically, I don't know, there was something to me that just, it was raw and not it, and just a little too raw. I don't know how long they've, I got, you know, they haven't been a band very long, right?
Right.
Like only like a couple of years. Like I got excited about this in that I was like, oh, I feel like there's like some growth that can happen here. And I feel like when it happens that this band is going to be actually like maybe mind blowing, you know, like to me, I don't know why also this episode, I'm like breaking down people's songwriting. I'm not like the world's greatest songwriter, like, but I, to me, there was just something where, yeah, there was just like another level that I like want them to get to. And I like, but I really do feel like they could get there. Like I want, you know, my eyes on like whatever they're, you know, releasing next, you know. John, what did you think about this?
I'm aware of the Northern Ireland Island conflict. I understand that entirely. But I would, and this is a dumb question, but I would really like to know, like, if you ask an Ireland, like, do Irish people think of Northern Ireland and Ireland as the same place? Or is it like USA and Canada? You know what I mean?
I think it depends where your loyalties lie. I think.
Yeah. I would say that's accurate, right?
So, like, so some people think of Ireland as just like a place, and some people think of they're two completely different countries totally.
Well, right, it's like decades of conflict, because there's some people that really feel like they are just exactly the same place, and why is there this ridiculous divide? You know, and they're like, this is nonsensical. You've taken these people that we are one people, and you have divided us into two over like an arbitrary border that you've drawn. And then there are other people that really feel that Northern Ireland is absolutely part of the UK, that is like, you know, that is their government, that is their identity. And so, you know, people kill each other over this stuff, and it's like flaring up again now. So you know, I mean, I'm sure, I'm not trying to condescend, I'm sure you know so much of that, John, but I think like Em's exactly right. It just like really depends who you ask, you know, because people's take, their perspective on it is so completely like night and day.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Yeah, unpleasant. Okay, let's see. Let's talk about something that's pleasant. I don't know if it's pleasant or not, depending on your take. And actually, someone in this band is Irish. How about that? we are talking about the band Spitter. Spitter is a Philadelphia punk metal band that includes member of Devil Master, Shit, Effer, Disjon, and Cape of Bats. Francis Kano is the guitar player in this band. He's in Devil Master and Integrity. They just put out their new EP. It's called Draconian Death Curse and a video. The punk news commenters said, this production is terrible. And that really annoyed me. I'm like, yeah, the production is terrible. That's the style, dickwad. You know, this is not Lagwagon. You know, it's like kind of the thing of, you know, black metal. It's more black metal punk. It's like, it's supposed to sound kind of grimy. It's supposed to sound kind of messed up. And ironically, a lot of those black metal guys, they're like, well, we didn't want to sound crappy. We wanted to sound good, but we only had a boombox. And now people want to sound crappy. That being said, I thought this track was cool. I didn't think it was groundbreaking, but I thought it was cool. I thought it was some kind of, you know, punchy black metal punk. I enjoy how, especially if you watch the video, it appears that the band is on the joke, like in that, like, you know, they've got corpse paint on, they're pretty ghouled up, and sometimes bands do that and they think they're like actually like scary or whatever, and you're like, oh my god, you guys are doing Halloween 365 days of the year. And sometimes the band is like, yes, we're aware it's theater, but we want to engage in that theater because we think it's fun and we think there's some kind of artistic statement there. I think it's clear that Spitter clearly is aware of that, especially if you watch the video, which is kind of silly and is purposely filmed so it looks like it was filmed in 1985. And so I didn't think this was groundbreaking. I thought this was cool. I think what's interesting is, were they touring, I think that Spitter would be yet another buzz band that would be massively popular in the underground, but then kind of suddenly disappear like a lot of those bands tend to do.
I totally want to be with you, John, on like the production thing, because I don't think it should matter. But I will say, like, I am kind of with the commenters on this one. I found the production to be so off that it kind of was like a barrier to entry for me. Mm-hmm. You know, like the vocals just were so confusing. Like they sounded to me like the singer had been like singing like inside an oil drum, and like that oil drum was like at least a block away from where the recording studio was. Like I just found it like bizarrely like echoey and also like far away. But then also, you know, I mean, the really metal-y stuff, like I can't always get, and I have to like turn to M for help. I have to have her explain to me why it's something that I have to like listen to again and enjoy it. But I know production, it's like you don't want it to matter. And there's stuff that's the production is so terrible, and that's like part of the charm. And then there's stuff where like the production is terrible and it just kind of prevents you from being able to like, or at least, yeah, me. It prevented me from like really being able to like listen to it the way that I wanted.
And that does underscore the point that production itself can be an artistic choice as much as the music itself, you know what I mean? But also, you know, I hate mega production where things sound like robots. I hate that. I'm not necessarily always a fan of terrible production, but I like it here because this band is almost a meta band and that they're commenting on a lot of these black metal bands from the mid-80s, you know. And the other counterattack was, this is cool, but you know what, though? This could have come out, like, any time in the past 20 years and, like, you would be like, fine. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing super radically new here. And so that's cool for an EP. I think this band could achieve greatness if they do something completely freaky or weird or new in addition to this classic black metal sound. And what do you think?
I loved this. This was great. The video was awesome.
Yes.
It was so nice. I used to listen to a lot of black metal, like it to the point where it was like concerning. And I listened to it the odd time. It's hard to find bands that are, not bad people. So it's nice to have something like this where they're keeping true to some of the, like the elements, like the vocals and the production, value and all that, just with the production value. One of the comments was, but it's not true cult if it doesn't sound like it was recorded with primitive technology in a cave. And I just started laughing. That got me. It was great. But no, like it ties everything in, and it's like 100% John, like they're doing this and then they're making fun of themselves. And it's so good to see, because, and then the video is like filmed in the forest too. And it's just like, there's layers. It's so good.
What's that video of like the black metal band from the 80s where they're like creeping around the forest, but it's like broad daylight?
Immortal,
yes. Oh yeah. My God. If you haven't seen the Immortal video, oh my God, it's great. It's unintentionally hilarious. You got to check that out. Listen, speaking of production choices as an artistic statement, Wil Wheaton, along with Punk Rock Karaoke, has released a cover of the Dead Kennedys Police Truck. People liked it a lot. I liked it a lot. I'm annoyed by Wil Wheaton, but I like this a lot, and I particularly liked how he specifically tweaked his vocals to kind of mimic Jello's very unique voice, which I didn't think one could do. But here, I mean, he's almost doing not a spot on Jello impression, but pretty close to a Jello impression. Did you guys dig this? Is this fun, or is the Punk Rock Karaoke joke, as you will, over? And actually, I'll point this out. I'm way more interested in Punk Rock Karaoke, generally speaking, unless it's one of my favorite bands. I'm more interested when it's a person from outside music doing a track rather than, you know, one of the guys from, you know, what's the name of that band? I don't know. One of the guys from what's that band from Santa Cruz that everyone loves that I think is okay? Not really. Kind of like metal and punk, just from Santa Cruz. They're on Fat Records.
Death by Stereo?
No, but that's a good example. I'm not interested in Death by Stereo doing a cover of The Clash, but I am interested in Wil Wheaton doing a cover of Dead Kennedys. What did you guys think of this?
I was surprised by it. I thought it was good. I wasn't sure what he was going to sound like. I wasn't sure what his whole thing was gonna be, but no, like it worked. It was really interesting the way he like made his voice sound and everything. Like it was really, really something else. A really good surprise. It was kind of interesting because I read his Wikipedia page, just because it was like, has he been in a punk band somehow? And one of the pictures on his Wikipedia page is he's wearing a Tsunami Bomb t-shirt. I just thought that was kind of funny. It's like, oh, cool. Like that didn't answer if he was in a band or not, but like that was kind of an interesting tie-in. And John, were you talking about Strung Out?
I think I was thinking of Strung Out, but I meant Good Riddance.
Oh, okay.
Oh, but I can see where you did. I can see where you got those confused. I don't know. Like, I put this in the category of like fun COVID project, right? But like, I don't know. I always, when covers sound like too much like the original, I'm always like, well, okay, but why? You know? I'm almost like, well, why did you need to do that? Other than that, it's just like we're in a pandemic and it's a fun thing to do. And in that way, I give this like a big thumbs up. But like also like, if it wasn't Wil Wheaton, that's kind of what just that fact is kind of what makes it like funny and interesting. Like if it wasn't Wil Wheaton, like would we care at all?
Not at all.
But maybe that's enough. Like, it is kind of funny. Like, oh, man, okay. It's like this kid from Star Trek is like now just like a grown up. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I put this in the category of like COVID project. It was fun. I'm glad I looked at it. I'll never think about it again.
What if it was Patrick Stewart?
Oh, my God. That would be legendary.
What if it was Whoopi Goldberg?
Oh, my God. Okay. We're not talking about it now, but we do at some point need to talk about the time that I went to Whoopi Goldberg's birthday party.
Yes, we do.
At her house.
Let's put a footnote on that. We have got to talk about it. Maybe we'll do that when we do our story episode, like when we tell stories.
Yes, totally. Yes. That's a good one. Yes.
Speaking of unexpected parties and stories at celebrities' house, Pete Davidson is now Joey Ramone. Netflix is putting out a Netflix special based off Mickey Lay, who is Joey Ramone's brother, his book, I Slept with Joey Ramone. Pete Davidson is going to star as Joey Ramone. people were surprised, particularly because Pete Davidson doesn't look like Joey Ramone at all, and a lot of people are kind of annoyed by Pete Davidson. I will say that I don't necessarily think so. An actor needs to look like the character that they're portraying, even though modern cinema seems to have that demand. That being said, I'm not particularly anti or pro Pete Davidson, but he does seem very pleased with himself, and he seemed like a cool guy, and I don't know if you can be a cool guy and play Joey Ramone. Maybe he's a great actor, but Joey Ramone was a weird guy and also, you know, very passive aggressive, and, you know, the Ramones were so dysfunctional. But at the root of it, I'm not interested in fictionalized or semi-fictionalized video accounts of what actually happened. I'm much more interested in the book where the person says what happened, or, you know, like NWA Straight Outta Compton movie. I still haven't seen it, even though I want to see it. But it annoys me that I know some parts are purposely fake. So so why am I watching this biography if parts are fake? That's the question, you know. As for Pete Davidson, I mean, I guess he's a fine actor, but there's probably better actors you could get to do it. But maybe Pete Davidson will prove himself to be an amazing actor. Somebody did point out that everyone laughed at Heath Ledger before he played the Joker, and he did an awesome job of the Joker, which is true.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Hallie, but what do you think of Pete Davidson? What do you think of this project?
At risk of being like that annoying person that right on the heels of saying that I was at Whoopi Goldberg's birthday party, also then turns around and says, I used to work with Mickey Lee at the Continental, and Joey Ramone used to come in and I used to serve him Cokes. But I did, and it was fucking awesome. And Mickey Lee is a great guy, and I'm so excited that they're making a movie out of his book. And I am worried about this casting. It seems very, very off to me, but I'm trying to keep an open mind. I just find this actor, I watched that movie that he made with Judd Apatow. I thought it like was, this, I don't know if you saw it. It was basically, Pete Davidson. Yeah. It was like basically based on his life. And so it was like a deeply personal story that was based on things that actually happened to him. And while I found him charming in it, I thought even that kind of showed his limitations as an actor, and that he was like basically playing himself. And also his energy is very sort of goofy and frenetic. And, you know, Joey Ramone was like this awkward, you know, awkward kind of soft-spoken guy. So it's hard for me to see how this is going to like, it's hard for me to see how this is going to make me happy. But I am keeping an open mind because I really do want it to be good. And it would be so amazing if like somehow this actor was just able to like pull a Heath Ledger and just like rise to the challenge and be the Joey Ramone that we need him to be, because it would just kill me if this is bad. You know, it really will just like kind of kill me. I don't know. Help? Is this going to be good? Is it going to be good?
I really hope it is. I think they only picked Pete Davidson for his height.
is he tall? I thought he was short. Is he tall?
No, he's tall.
Oh. He's 6'3", and then Joey Ramone was 6'6", apparently. So he's 3 inches off, but he's almost there. So I don't know. It seems like a very strange choice for casting. Again, really hope he pulls it off, but very, very doubtful, if you will. You know, surprise us, Pete. Give us a good performance. But it's hard to kind of see past they picked him because of the height thing.
I wonder if this choice was because, like, they're like, we need somebody that's hot right now. And Pete Davidson is relatively hot right now. Or if Pete Davidson's like, I need a role to define myself, kind of like Adam Sandler in the excellent what's the movie where he's like autistic, or not autistic?
Is it like Punch Drunk Love?
Punch Drunk Love. Yeah. Hallie, I did that movie. You like that movie, or you think that movie's too simple?
It was so long ago. I can't even. I remember liking it fine. I don't remember being blown away by it, but it was so long ago that I honestly don't even totally remember what my thoughts were.
Although when I saw that, I was definitely in my college artsy movie phase. You know, I was like, nah, like that's actually just a bad movie. It's not art. You know, but I did like that movie. Then I saw it not that long ago, and I did enjoy watching it. So I wonder if this is, we need someone hot right now to play Joey Ramone, or if it's Pete Davidson saying, I really need to define myself. Because it is an unexpected casting. And unexpected casting can either go great because everyone's like, oh, it's going to be terrible and he's awesome, or just terrible. And we'll see. Let's do one last story because we referenced this at the beginning. Subatomic Sound System, the touring act behind Lee Scratch Perry, but also a recording group in their own right, led by a DJ called Emch, I think is how you say his name. And they also recorded with Ari Up. And also in the band is Larry McDonald. If you've ever heard bongos on a reggae record or congas on a reggae record, that's probably Larry McDonald. Peter Tosh, Bob Marley, Bunny Wailer, Lee Perry, Abyssinians, Larry McDonald is all over those records. Anyways, the Subatomic Sound System have released a version of John Holt's Police and Helicopter with Yodcore and John Nine. John Nine is a somewhat famous Canadian reggae singer, and she's been establishing herself for about, I don't know, 10 years or so. And in Canada, she's kind of like a better known in the reggae scene there, which is not huge in Canada, but still. And so anyways, they put out a new version of Police and Helicopter, and I thought it was pretty cool and pretty rad. Anne, what'd you think?
I thought it was really good. This is the first time hearing this, the song. So I listened to the version that's on Punk News, and then I listened to the John Holt version, and then I listened to this one again, and it's very, very good. Like, they do a good job, and everyone's voices sounds, like, insane. It sounds really good.
I thought it was so interesting to hear this. Like, you know, I don't know what you guys think. Like, this felt very pointed to me because they're releasing this song, which is about cops cracking down on, you know, marijuana use and marijuana growth, I guess. But I thought it was like so – it seemed very pointed to me that they are like releasing this right after Cuomo has signed like the marijuana legalization in New York. It sort of felt like, you know, like almost like a Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. Like, I don't know, sort of like a very like roundabout way of celebrating like the end of something that was like really quite oppressive. And so, yeah, I thought this was really cool. And I really should have done more reading about just about the project, because I wonder if that is like part of why they decided to, you know, why this song, why right now, you know, I wonder if that was a part of the thought process there. Do you know, John?
I don't know. I know that this track, it's probably been in like, Emch or EMCH, I don't know how to say his name. He does collaboration with a lot of people, and he'll do it bit by bit. So sometimes he'll release a song and it's been in the works for 3 years or something like that, you know. So it might just be a nice coincidence, you know.
Yeah. Anyhow, I thought it was cool. I thought it was a really cool perspective to get right now. It sort of made me breathe a sigh of relief. It's just to hear these lyrics about this, and to be like, oh wow, like at least in New York, where this band is from, like maybe that won't be like that particular issue won't be an issue anymore, you know.
Indeed. The listeners should also go check out the Police and Helicopter album by John Holt. It's got one of the coolest reggae album covers ever. It's got John Holt running through a ganja field, and he's got this gigantic bag of weed, and there's a helicopter behind him taking shots at him. It's honestly, it looks like a comic book cover. It's like super rad. Hallie Bull, you got a track to play, or what should we do here?
I do, yeah. I didn't have a lot of time because I was busy trying to get COVID shots into people's arms at this chaotic drive-thru. I just didn't have a lot of time to listen to new music this week, but I got an interesting thing in my inbox from Bandcamp that was just kind of like, hey, listen to this. And then I listened to it and I liked it. And then when I looked on Punk News, Em had written about it. So I thought it was like, I thought it was worth playing. And I don't know, Em, if you know any more about this band, feel free to pipe up, because I don't really know much about them. But this is Chubby and the Gang, and this is a new song they released called Lightning Don't Strike Twice. And I don't know, something about the chorus really, really got me. And it's a style that I was sort of surprised that I liked the song as much as I did. Well, it had like kind of like what is it? It's got kind of like a southern, like bluesy rock feel, right? Like it's interesting. It's kind of combining like a bunch of different genres. And yeah, like I said, it was mostly just the chorus kind of just got me in the gut. I was like, oh, there's something that the drummer does, and there's something that the vocals are doing in the chorus that I was like, oh, I immediately latched onto it. I was like, oh, I love this. But yeah, Em, I don't know. Do you have anything? Do you know anything else about this band? Like I said, it was just sort of like a thing that showed up in my inbox that I liked.
I know a little bit about them, not a lot.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. If we don't know anything about them, then yeah, then here's the song.
Yeah, but they're really good. You should check them out.
Last question, Hallie Bullet. Chubby and the Gang, in a massive amount of buzz behind their debut album, sold out 3 times so far, I think. Will the buzz continue?
Yeah, I think so, based on this release, yeah.
Well, they have it. Any last words, anything you want the listeners to know about Hallie Bullet?
No, I did just want to say though that we were laughing before we started recording about the fact that like no one commented on this Chubby and the Gang song when it was posted on Funk News. So I don't know if it just like, I don't know if it, I when I listened to it, I was like, oh, I think this would appeal to a broad amount of people, but, I don't know. Yeah. I'd be interested to know what people are thinking about it.
Well,
good or bad, you know, it's funny when there's just no comments on stuff. You're like, is no one commenting because everyone was like, oh yeah, this is pretty good, or is no one commenting on it because people were like, yeah, this is pretty bad and I don't care enough to comment. Like, I always find the no comments thing to be like almost like the most funny, because you're just like, well, what's happening here? Like, did people even listen to it? Or I don't know. I just rambled. You shouldn't have even asked me if I had anything else to say. I should have just wrapped it up before.
Listen, that's what we do on the show is ramble on and more ramble on. Any closing words, anything you want to expand to the listeners that say we can stop listening for Strung Out for a few minutes and listen to PUNK Punk, that is Chubby and the Gang. What would you like to say to the listeners?
That's a good question. I think that there should be more black metal punk crossover bands. So if you know of any, like, I want to know. And also any, like, sleep remedies would be wonderful. So that's my two cents.